Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live, where we bring you the best in music, books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us. Now, here is your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again. Whether you're tuning in through Conversations Radio Network, we welcome you. Those joining us on the radio dial in Mississippi at WYAD 94.1 FM, we're glad that you could tune in. As well as those joining us on the East Coast in Atlanta at 106liveradio.com, we're glad to have all of you with us as well. Excited to welcome back to our program today author John Dudakis. We're going to be talking with him not only about his newest book, Bullet in the Chamber, out officially October the 1st, but we're going to be able to talk about it here and tell you guys how you can go ahead and order your copy, but also some of the issues he's able to address as he introduces a new character to us, that being Lark Techwit. We're going to talk to John not only about the creation of Lark, but also the situations that she finds herself in journalism, something that he knows a lot about, but also, of course, how it kind of hits close to home for her when it comes to some of the people in her lives and some of the issues that are addressed in the book. If you're just now hearing about John, we'll tell you a little bit later how you can stay connected with him. But John, hello to you, and welcome back to the program.
Hi, Cyrus. It's good to be back. Thank you.
Hey, the pleasure's definitely all mine. I had a lot of fun reading this book, for one, because, you know, I think for one, I mean, any book that is written in first person, I think it automatically connects with the reader because it feels like it's them, because we're saying I all the time, or, you know, or things that are going on. But also I think because, you know, it shows that when it comes to our lives, no matter, you know, how good we are at what we do, how the things that we're going through personally can affect the way that we do our work as well, how we kind of react professionally. First of all, what has it been like for you to see how people are already, even though the book hasn't officially been released, what has it been like for you to see the way that they're relating to Lark?
It's gratifying, I suppose, because one of the things that I've discovered is that, to a certain extent, the book deals with heroin addiction, because my son died of a heroin overdose about 5 years ago, and so I took his story and fictionalized it and then rolled it into, you know, a mystery suspense thriller novel. And so what I've discovered, at least in the short term, is that just about everywhere I go where I speak about the book or talk about writing, someone comes forward to either talk about how they are, you know, recovering from some sort of an addiction or how they've endured some sort of sadness in their own family. The CDC basically says that heroin addiction and fatal overdoses is an epidemic in this country. It's a scourge, and it's everywhere. And I'm just finding how ubiquitous it is.
Yeah. You know, I think that the thing is, and I'm glad that you mentioned that, John, and also, of course, you know, I know it has to be, you know, one of those things as you are writing a book like this, it has to be for you, as it does with Lark, hit close to home as well. You know, the character Doug in the book is an interesting one because we're able to kind of get an idea of, you know, how someone who looks as though they have it all, how someone could end up not only, of course, having an addiction, but also, of course, the effects of that on the people that they love as well as on themselves. How difficult was that for you to kind of have Doug in Lark's life, John, and then, of course, to know the path that he was on?
Well, as a writer, you sort of know how it's all going to end. And because I write in first person, that severely limits the point of view, and that you only see a very limited part of the story. And what makes it, I think, engaging for the reader is that's the way we live life. You know, we don't have the perspective of omniscience. We only often sometimes have just enough light for the next step. And so in my case, I had to kind of live what Lark experienced and was groping along to make sense out of what was going on in my family when my son revealed his heroin addiction, which was sadly only a month before he died. And so we hadn't really had a chance to, you know, work on strategies for recovery. And that's true for, you know, sadly so many other families. And so writing about it knowing how things were going to end. I mean, I literally was crying as I was writing at some points, and still when I would reread some of those passages, it would bring up those emotions. And
yeah,
you know, it may not have that effect on someone else, but as a writer, it was cathartic to be able to write about it. And I hope in the long run, some people may find it helpful, if for no other reason than to find out that, you know, their behavior is going to affect, you know, the people that they love. And if they really are better aware of the pain that it causes someone else, then maybe that might be the prompt that they need to turn their life around, or to take the steps that they need to get help.
Right. I think that is true. And again, it really shows the parallels, John, between yourself and Lark throughout this book. We're going to get more into that. I want to say, for those who are just tuning in, either on the radio side or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. We're excited to welcome back to our program today John Dudakis. We're talking with him not only about his newest book, Bullet in the Chamber. We'll remind you all a little bit later how you can order your own copy, but also, of course, the main character of the book, Lark Chadwick. This is a Lark Chadwick mystery, so we can definitely expect to have more of Lark in the future. You know, there is, of course, the parallels that I mentioned, you know, and I've heard authors talk about, John, on this program in the past, about, you know, writing what they know, and, of course, you know, finding some comfort there. You know, you have had a career in journalism, being recognized for that. That, of course, is what Lark is recognized for, as well, being able to do work that matters, and, of course, covering a very powerful place, that being, you know, the White House. You know, did that make it easier to tell this story, because you were, of course, you're being a man telling the story of, you know, of this book, you know, with the, you know, the female protagonist? Did that make it easier to be able to kind of weave a part of your journey in with hers?
Well, it does help to write what you know. And I covered the White House for the last 3 years of the Reagan administration. But that was before the Internet. That was before cell phones. So the coverage of the White House happens a lot differently now, and so I turned to my friend Josh Lederman, who is a White House correspondent for the Associated Press. Lark's job is in this story, and so, you know, Josh was able to clue me in on some of the tactics that are used these days, and he wrote a very generous blurb for me that goes in the back cover. But so the journalism side of it is, you know, it's a challenge, because you write what you know, but you got to update it at the same time.
Sure.
I've never been a woman in this life, so that's also a stretch. But one of the things I've discovered in writing as a woman is that, really, when you think about it, emotions are gender specific. We all have them. It's just, in my experience, women are more, I don't know, nuanced and interesting in the way they express themselves. So I guess if you come right down to it, Lark is probably the person I would be if I were a woman. She's got a lot of my emotions. She just is, you know, better at dealing with them and in a more interesting way. And then there's the grief part. And you know, as I say, you that's the hard part of the story. But getting it out there really did help. And one of the things that I learned from grief counseling, I went through about 2 years of grief counseling, and I wrote the book while I was going through grief counseling. One of the things I discovered is, you know, with grief counseling, it brings up all kinds of stuff. And in my case, my sister killed herself 36 years ago, and I'd never really dealt with that. So I ended up dealing with her death as well. And what I realized, I got some clarity in my grief counseling sessions, and realized that one of the reasons that I write as a woman is that I'm hoping to be able to create a character that I wish my sister had allowed herself to be able to become. So Lark is probably makes better decisions, wiser, still has fears and impediments, but I think she lives life in a way that's admirable. And several people who've read my novels have told me that they wish she were that Lark were her best friend, you know, would be a friend of theirs. So that's encouraging.
Right. And then there's the character Rochelle Grigsby that you introduced. definitely not someone who seems to be a friend of Lark in some of the encounters that they have, but definitely shed some light on what was going on with the other character I mentioned earlier, Doug. Talk to us about that. I mean, what was it like for you to not only peel back the layers of Rochelle, but allow, you know, her to be able to tell Lark why she may have treated her the way that she did, but also shine some light on what was going on with Doug that Lark did not know, to kind of help piece some things together as well?
Well, now you're asking me to give away all the plot, but I will.
Okay. Okay.
I'll give you. Let me just set the scene, though. The story begins on Lark's first day as a White House correspondent. She's been a reporter for a while, and she's been at the Associated Press for a while, but this is her first day on the White House beat. And Rochelle Grigsby is Lark's immediate supervisor. She's the managing editor, but she doesn't necessarily have hiring and firing authority. So Rochelle is not as taken by Lark's reporting skills as the higher ups, as the higher ups do at AP. And so, you know, Rochelle is one of those people who's a bit jealous, and so is trying to throw Lark off her game every chance she gets. And that we can relate to, because there have been people in our lives who are like that, who, you know, a lot of the villains in our lives don't necessarily manifest themselves as villainous to begin with. And it's only later that their true colors show. Now, I'm not saying that Rochelle is necessarily the bad guy, but, you know, Rochelle is definitely one of those characters that gets in the way of Lark wanting to do a good job as a White House correspondent. And at the point that the story begins, Lark is covering this newly elected president, and during the White House briefing, the White House is attacked. And so the president goes missing, the first lady's life is in danger, and as you've mentioned, Lark's personal life starts falling apart, but she's still got to do her job, and at a wire service, it's a deadline a minute. So the obstacles increase as the story goes on. As far as the dynamic between Lark and Rochelle, you know, Lark is trying to be diplomatic, even though she knows that she's been stabbed in the back a few times. And this other character, Doug, is a photographer for AP, also covering the White House. Lark and Doug have a history. They knew each other at their previous jobs. There's some sparks there, but Doug is kind of a player, and Lark is not totally sure she can trust this guy, but he's catnip. You know, there's this inexorable attraction that they have, and of course he'd certainly like it to go farther than Lark would, but you know, so you've got that dynamic, that push pull that happens when you've got attraction, but you've also got red flags flying, and so that's sort of what's going on in this. In the story, which I think makes it realistic.
Right, for sure.
I'm not sure.
And I think
I'm not sure I'm answering your question, but I'm at least
I feel as though you did a really good job of talking around it, so as to not spoil anything. So I totally understand that. So, but that does help people to know, for those who are just hearing about the book, John, to know a little bit about the character that I was asking about, Rochelle, and of course the dynamic, so they can kind of figure that out as they're reading the book, for sure. You know, I mentioned to you before we began the segment that of course there are other things at play in this book as well. You mentioned the attack of the White House, but also of course there's the issue of policy. You know, that's one of the things that you address in the book as well. Drones are something that we've heard quite a bit about in the quote-unquote real world. Of course, we see one front and center on the copy of the book as well. I mean, how did you make the decision around these other layers of the book? How did you make a decision of other issues that you wanted to kind of bring into play in the story?
Well, when you try to make a story that's going to be, to a certain extent, topical. I mean, I know politics. I covered politics for a long time. And the whole issue of drones is, in a sense, one of the driving forces in the story. Just as the president is about to address the press corps, he's going to be revealing his policy on the commercialization of drones, which is something that the FAA has been dealing with, and we're already starting to see I mean, you know, Amazon wants to start delivering packages, you know, by drone. Not only that, but we have police departments that use drones for surveillance. Movie companies want to use drones for, you know, those great panoramic shots. Realtors want to be able to use drones to show the property better. You know, drones are becoming much more embedded in our life. It's also being used on the battlefield to kill people who are trying to kill us. But that's controversial because there's collateral damage. So there are a lot of issues that are going on in, you know, right in the front pages of the newspaper that I hope to be able to touch on at least a little bit as a way of moving my story forward. It's sort of the news of the day backdrop.
Right, right. And it definitely does, I think, make people think for sure, and I think that, again, is what makes this book so interesting. John, for you, what was the most challenging thing in writing Bullet in the Chamber? I mean, considering, of course, as we've already mentioned, you know, you're writing the book in first person. You're, you know, allowing us to see this world as Lark is able to see and experience it. What was for you the most challenging?
Oh, I think by far the most challenging was just giving voice to the personal story, the grief story. That was hard. And I got the idea for the front cover has a bullet in a syringe, which was an image that came to me 3 days after Stephen went missing. And the obvious idea I wanted to convey is the Russian roulette powerfulness of the of heroin addiction, that you just don't know if that's the one that hit is going to be the one that kills you. But, you know, there was also sort of a hidden agenda there because, you know, in my personal opinion, a pusher, if the cops can make the connection between the fatal heroin dose and the death, that the cops should be able to charge the pusher with second-degree murder, because like selling a bullet, a pistol with one bullet in the chamber to someone they know is going to play Russian roulette and they don't care. But I also found in writing that book that it's not a slam dunk for the authorities, that there are a lot of difficulties in proving that. And so from a personal standpoint, it's not easy for me to realistically write the kind of justice that I'd like to see. And that's one of the hard things that was dealt with. And I started to write it about 8 months after he died, and I wrote about 6 chapters. I couldn't write anymore. I hit a wall. It was just too soon. And so part of what made it difficult was being able to sit down and write the whole thing through and then rewrite it and mold it and buff and polish it until it wasn't just, you know, my slobbering all over the page, but it actually was molded into a novel that, you know, someone who didn't know Stephen, who doesn't know me, who doesn't really care about my personal story, may still find it an engaging story.
Right. I think that is so true, and I think it's engaging, and also I think it reminds us of something, too, as Lark was able to experience, that even when you're going through a challenging situation, when you are good at what you do, when being a professional is important to you, as you address in the book, John, you know, even though you're grieving, you know, if the job calls, you go. Well, especially if you work at the White House, you go. I mean, that's just what you do. I mean, everything else. Do you hope that that's one of the things too that we realize? Because of course, journalists these days sometimes get a bad rap as to being
sometimes,
you know, too cozy. Yeah, well, you know, cozy to some of those that they cover, or may having favorites or their own agenda. I mean, you know, what was your hope about us looking at Lark as someone who could be trusted?
You know, I'm glad you brought that up because I do a lot of public speaking, and almost every time I get a question that may be phrased one way or another, but at its root is a question about media bias. And I think it's a very important question because people want to trust the information they're receiving, and I think all too often they're not trusting it. They for one reason or another. And so I like to have the opportunity to address that, and in my books to be able to show, you know, what goes on behind the scenes. Because I think, frankly, Cyrus, a lot of people who are critical of the media have never met a reporter and have no clue what goes on behind the scenes. And,
right.
I mean, for one, the media is not a monolith. There are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of voices out there that are the media, and they don't all agree. They don't all cover the same things. They don't cover them all the same way. Some are opinionated, some are not. And so there's much more nuance involved in the media. And so and reporters are human. You know, are they biased? You bet, because they're human. But the professional reporter, the ones that I've worked with over the years, including the 25 years I worked at CNN, the professionals really work hard at getting the story right, as opposed to, you know, trying to convince you to believe a certain way. Now, I know, you know, me saying that isn't going to convince a lot of people, but I've seen it from the inside, and one of my jobs was to guard against biased reporting. So I know that there's an attempt to do that. We can all come up with grievous examples of mistakes that were made and blatant bias that happened. But what I hope people will understand is that the most reporters are really about getting the story right, and they make mistakes, but it doesn't mean that they have an axe to grind and are trying to persuade. The good reporters are form.
Right. I think that is so true, so true. And I had to, of course, bring that up because I think since, like I said, I know we'll be hearing more from Lark. You know, she has to be someone that we have some kind of connection with. And I think, you know, again, as I said, you know, even though she's going through things in her personal life, allowing, you know, the work to still be done, I think is so important for sure. And it's something that all of us, again, as you mentioned earlier, can relate to. Again, everyone, John Dudakis has been our guest for the segment. The new book, officially out October 1st, but you all can go ahead and order it now through our friends at Amazon.com. It's called Bullet in the Chamber. It's a Lark Chadwick mystery. And John, how can our audience stay connected with you and keep up what's coming up next for you?
Well, let's see. They can probably the best way to either get the book and stay in touch with me is through my website, which is johndudakis.com, and I'll spell that for you. It's J-O-H-N. Last name is D as in dog E, D as in dog A, K-I-S as in Sam, johndudakis.com. And I'm hoping to be able to write a fifth novel at some point, but I haven't had the time to do that yet.
Well, like I said, you've definitely been staying busy, John, and we appreciate you taking the time to be with us. And it goes without saying, you're welcome back here anytime. Looking forward to having you back.
Thanks, Cyrus. It's always good to talk to you.
All right, same here. And we thank your audience for tuning in to another great segment of Conversations Live. If you all came in late, you missed part of the conversation with John, don't worry. Thanks to our online friends, you all can catch the replay right after we go off the air. The link is already available through our social media sites. So head over to Facebook.com/CyrusWeb or go over to Twitter.com/CyrusWeb. You can click on the link there, listen to the show completely for free, and share it with your friends from there. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music, as well as a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live. You all make it a great one.